All right, I like it. Upbeat song to start an upbeat afternoon. Very happy to be here this afternoon. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, online tsn1050.ca. Your home smart speaker and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Was it everything you were hoping it would be, boys? What a weekend in the sports world. I enjoyed every second of it. I loved it.
My only advice is take that helmet in the back thing and burn it. Burn it!
Listen, I've got to interject here. Because I was concerned about you, Hayes, because I thought that coach made a garbage call.
Why didn't he answer my FaceTime yesterday?
Because the last guy on earth I wanted to hear from was you.
I'm just saying.
See? Okay. The fact that I saw FaceTime twice from you, I'm like, this guy is going to be in, like, Buccaneers face paint or something.
Yeah, I know.
I couldn't flush it quick enough. It was sickening. Continue. Sorry, Noodles.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is I'm not sure where I stand, like, because it's obvious that Aaron Rodgers wanted to go for that, correct? Did the whole world want to go for that?
I think everyone on earth, absolutely, and any quarterback worth their salt, wants to continue to try to push forward on fourth down. And clearly, right. Aaron Rodgers at home, down 8, fourth quarter, 2 minutes to go. Yeah, I think it goes without saying that number 12 wanted to continue to pursue a touchdown there.
Yeah, I mean, he bit his tongue for the most part. Like, he let everyone know that that was not his call. So he I don't want to say he threw the coach under the bus because that was the coach's call. Like, he just flat out said, I just executed the call. That's it. You know
Noodles,
what I mean?
Third and 8 the play before. He could have run into the end zone.
I know.
I have spoken to some people that think, oh, he might have got to the 2 or 3.
He wasn't getting in.
Excuse me.
Listen, Steve Jobs with your FaceTime. He wasn't getting in. Go look at the tape. There were guys pursuing him from every angle.
But he could have
picked up 4 or 5 yards, no question.
How do you know that people were pursuing him from every angle? He didn't even attempt it. And I will say this for the call at the end by Guy Lafleur. You go to Shoemaker with the Jays. They just had to pull him. The Snell situation with the Tampa Bay Rays. And then you know that what was the terminology Guy Lafleur used after the game? He's like, we got to be process-driven.
It's about the process, yeah.
Process-driven thinking. You knew it was about the analytics saying,
absolutely,
we have to kick this right now, and that gives us the best chance to win.
I saw what happened in those
three situations for those people going by the numbers. By the way, I'm not anti-analytic. I don't really care how you support your team or how you view teams, but those three decisions were all junk.
Okay, I understand analytics in hockey, that's it, not in baseball or football, but I also understand eye test. The MVP of the league, I would much rather put the ball in his hands and say, go win it or lose it. That would be my, I guess, gut reaction at that time. Because Rodgers, all year, has come up with magic. It's a magical season for him.
Yep.
Or maybe if it's Nathan Peterman on the other side, you hand the ball to that guy, but not Tom Brady.
All I'm saying is that I just felt if you're going to go down swinging, don't go down with any questions. There was questions now in Green Bay other than answers. Like, we could be talking today, hey, you know what? Rodgers missed a pass. They didn't execute on fourth.
Who knows if they execute on fourth down?
Exactly. Yep. We don't know. But he never got the opportunity. That will drive him nuts. Like that.
He won't sleep the rest of the offseason, and this is something that hangs over a coach until you win a Super Bowl. The only way Matt LaFleur ever gets over that decision yesterday is if he wins a Super Bowl. Just getting to one isn't going to be enough. You have to win one because that will hang over you forever, that you kicked that field goal. Now, there are a couple of things that need to be addressed and need to be laid out on the table before I kind of unload here on a few different things.
Go ahead. The floor is yours.
One of them is, yes, we don't know if they would have actually converted on fourth down. Furthermore, they needed a 2-point conversion after that. So they really needed to score 2 touchdowns, you know, within the 10-yard line to tie the game. And even if you did that, you're still handing the ball to Brady, 2-minute drill, maybe he storms down the field, they kick a field goal with 5 seconds left and you lose anyway. At some point, you needed your defense to get a stop. Like, I'll say that about LaFleur and the Packers. Even if you go for it on fourth and you convert the 2-point conversion, it's tied. and Brady's got the ball with 2 minutes to go. Your defense had to make a stop, one way or the other, for you to get a chance to win it in overtime. Had to make a stop. So that might have been the thought process from LaFleur. We got to get a stop anyway. Let's get these points on the board. If we get the ball back, then maybe we score a touchdown. The issue with that is, instead of having to go 45 or 50 yards down the field, Brady's got to move the chains once. And if you go for it on fourth and miss it, the safety comes into play. You know, you're handing the ball over on the 8th-yard line. The first play he made after they kicked the field goal, then kicked the ball off, play action pass to Mike Evans. He's not doing a play action if he's taking the ball in the end zone or close to it. He's not going to do it. He's not going to risk taking a safety and then having to punt the ball away with 2 points on the board. So it changed everything from Tampa's perspective. I was in the building last year. This time last year, it was somber for me. I had taken the red eye back from San Francisco where they got their doors blown off. I remember saying this second a year ago, the Packers lost the game last year against San Francisco. Their first drive, it was 4th-and-1 on the 50-yard line, and they punted. Matt LaFleur, remember that? Matt LaFleur last year said, I don't have the stones to go for it and send a message. 30 seconds later, the Niners were in the end zone, up 7-0, and they never looked back. And I remember at that moment, I was standing beside my brother-in-law. I said, he's got to go for it here. He's got to prove they're here to win. And he didn't do it. They lost the NFC Championship game last year on a gutless kick on the first possession. Well, and he lost another one on a gutless kick on the last possession yesterday. And LaFleur's got to own both.
Yeah, Guy LaFleur does have to own those. You think about the game prior, the call that Andy Reid made on 4th-and-3 where they threw it to Tyreek Hill to get that and end the game.
Stones.
That just shows you the difference of kind of that. And I think Matt LaFleur is a real smart guy. He looks like he's bright. He's got new ideas. And he thinks about the game. Yeah, yep. There's no question about that.
He's not getting fired or anything.
But so does Andy Reid. And you throw in kind of the old school kind of football knowledge where it's like, I got to just do this right here. I don't care what the numbers say or anybody else is telling me. I got to get these guys to pull this play off. And they did it. And I don't even think Mahomes was the quarterback.
He wasn't.
No, it was Henny.
It was Chad Henne.
But I'm saying, you know what it is? Trust your instincts. Like, that's Aaron Rodgers. That isn't Al's brother they're snapping it to. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the point. Like, you should trust superstars and guys that deliver in clutch situations to give them an opportunity to be clutch. That's the only thing that bothers me. Everything else, I understand. You still needed the defense. Maybe the numbers were suggesting this and numbers were suggesting that.
Well, I think
just
they were.
Just use logic.
By like 2%, though, Noodles. Like,
I know, but
you kicked a field goal. Here's another thing that goes without saying but should be addressed. We're all focused on this play, and we will be for a long, long time. The Packers lost this game at the end of the first half and the beginning of the second half. Like, if you're down 18-0 in a championship game to Tom Brady and that defense, chances are you're not going to win. So the way they played in the first half was awful. Kevin King got torched all night. And listen, that Bucs defense is legit. You know, that's 2 weeks in a row where we're going to talk a lot about Tom Brady, deservedly so. Brady threw 3 picks and held on for dear life yesterday. That Bucs defense is legit. They did it last year to Drew Brees. They ended Brees' career. Who knows what they just did to Aaron Rodgers and his reign in Green Bay. But this is where you can drag all these sports into it together. In football, it's more focused. It's a lot more focused because it stops and starts. It's so regimented in terms of game planning. But 90% of coaching is below the surface or behind the scenes, right? It's preparation, it's schemes, it's culture, practice habits. We can't see it. Like 90% of coaching. Very rarely can you pinpoint one moment where it's like, this is the difference between a coach winning or a coach losing. And that's what we saw yesterday. We saw a guy who bailed out. And Andy Reid, the week before, said, I'm going to win. And he picked up a win. And, right, like it's Kevin Cash. He decided to lose. He pulled him from the game.
I actually think there's ego involved, too, where Matt LaFleur is like, wait till I pull this off and everyone's going to say, wow, you're such a genius. How'd you think of that? No one would have done what you just did there. And I don't know. There's ego, man, where it's like he wanted that attention where if that worked – it's just like, who the hell else does that?
But we all know, and this is pro sports, when things work, it doesn't matter. You don't need to answer for it. When they don't, you have to answer for it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what sport it is at what level. That's just that's the reality of it.
Yep.
And in that situation, Guy Lafleur is having to answer some questions today, whereas Andy Reid, he puts the sock over his face or wherever the hell that is. He wears the shield. And like, that guy's a legend.
He's off to Tampa in a Hawaiian shirt, and he's coaching in another Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Why don't you think that's – why isn't that – like, as far as coaching goes, why isn't that a fireable offense when you've got a team that's basically Super Bowl ready and Super Bowl driven, and he just does that? Like, how do you think Aaron Rodgers could ever trust him? And Aaron Rodgers, like, I'm just – going by some of his boys on Twitter, you know he's buddies with that McAfee dude because he's on his podcast all the
every
time.
Every week, yep.
McAfee's like, now there's question marks. What's going on with the future of this guy? And who's in control of his future? They're saying Rodgers. What's he – like, now there's question marks about Aaron Rodgers' future. Big ones.
Well, and I think there's a couple different angles on that. One, it might be time for him to put some pressure on the front office. Like, Rodgers may decide, and I'm sure he's been looking around. Like, Brady got everything he wanted in Tampa this year. Everything.
Right.
Go trade for Gronk. You got it. Go grab my boy Antonio Brown. You got it. I want to run the playbook the way I want to run it. You got it. And you look at other athletes, LeBron James, everywhere he goes, LeBron's like, go get this guy, go get that guy. By all accounts, Aaron Rodgers has sat back, shown up, and done his thing. I wouldn't be surprised if he said, you know what, it's time for me to play that game. Like, I want you to drop this. I want you to sign that. And I wouldn't blame him for that either.
Isn't he 37?
Like, he's 37, but he just put forth arguably the best year of his career, and he's a top 10 quarterback all time.
Shouldn't he have been doing that 3 years ago? Like, you know, more when he has a lot more runway left. Like, they're going to go get these things.
Look at the guy in the Super Bowl, Noodles. He's 43.
Yeah.
If that's the case, Rodgers might have at least two or three more great years.
Yeah,
so I don't think it's ever too late in the NFL. I do wonder if him playing the wasn't my call, or I guess he dropped the soundbite like, hey, even my future's uncertain, is deflecting the blame or the attention a little bit. Because he didn't get the job done either. You know, I love Aaron Rodgers. The fact is, in the fourth quarter, he had a couple of possessions. He didn't get the job done. He threw a bad pick at the end of the first half. You know, like, it's easy to say, and I could understand it from a PR standpoint, instead of everyone blasting away at me here, let's go look at LaFleur. Let's go look at the GM. Let's talk about my future here, because that will get people off my back a little bit based on the fact that I lost again. And he did. You know, his stats in the biggest games outside of that playoff run, that Super Bowl run 10 years ago, have not exactly been, you know, ideal.
Yeah. Yep. And Hazy, for Tampa Bay, on the positive, I think just what you were talking about with Aaron, Noodles was talking about Aaron Rodgers, and you were discussing it, him having kind of more of the call or making calls on personnel or whatever. I think this year for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I did follow them, I love Tom Brady. I'm not a Buccaneers diehard. Everybody knows that. But at the beginning, it was, you know what, this offense, they're not used to each other. They're not used to each other. And that went on for five or six games.
Yep.
And Brady didn't look good. And Bruce Arians was calling out this, and Gronk didn't look good. I think the ship turned when Tom Brady basically said to everybody, including their head coach, you guys need to take a step back and let me run the ship here. Because I know what the hell I'm doing. Don't tell me about your offense and Byron Leftwich telling me what to do. I'm going to tell you guys how this machine is going to work. And then I think they started to become a machine when Tom Brady said, let me show you guys how this is going to operate.
Wow.
And they won seven in a row going into the playoffs,
exactly.
And now they're dynamite.
Yeah, I think you're onto something. They were 7-5 before the bye week. They're 7-0 since. I think Brady also was smart enough to jump on a team. Like, that defense is a really good defense.
And
like,
he has really weapons good. Up front.
And he's got the weapons to help. I mean, he threw three picks yesterday.
I know.
He set
some
the tone
ones,
with that,
too.
That first drive, he was outstanding. That was vintage Brady, right? Like,
right.
Three different times on third down, he converts. He throws a great ball to Mike Evans. They're up 7-0. Boom. The tone is set. That bomb he threw to end the first half was just a brilliant play, brilliant throw. And he looked at Kevin King all night and said, I'm going to torch that guy, including the last play of the game, basically, when he drew a flag off Mike Evans. But outside of that, that wasn't, you know, 400 yards, 35 for 37, and just a perfect quarterback rating. It was just good enough. But that's all Brady needed to do. That's all he needed to do last week. It's all he needed to do this week. And he may be in a position to win a Super Bowl and do it in 2 weeks. And at that point, you don't have to explain a thing.
No,
you know, he doesn't have to anyway. His legacy is set. But what he is on the verge of potentially achieving here, of course there's no precedent. We're in a pandemic. The guy's 43 years old. He's with a new team. He had no training camp, no exhibition games. It's incredible, man.
The video off the plane, it seems like I've seen it 8 times.
It's nauseating.
Him and Gronk, when they're playing the video and the music's going, and then Gronk lifts up his shirt and it's like champions. It's like, oh, my God, they did that again?
It's crazy. It is crazy. I thought there was one weird thing. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but Arians basically saying that, like, he's coaching. Like, now
Tom
he's...
Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
as he should
be. I understand it, but, like, to admit it, I think it's kind of embarrassing. Like, it's basically, who was the coach in Cleveland there?
But maybe this guy's football
Kitchens.
IQ is off the charts.
NBA. I could see
Ty Lue.
Tyronn Lue.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's basically it. Like,
but remember who you're talking about there, Noodles. We're talking Tom Brady and LeBron James. He's not saying that some rookie plug tight end gets to do whatever he wants and make his – like, I understand making the exception to the rule. I understand saying, listen, Tom Brady's Tom Brady. If he feels he's got something cooking, go for it. You know, there are very few players in the history of sports that deserve that latitude. I think Brady's got to be one of them. I hear what you're saying going public with it.
Right.
But that's Arians. He's been doing that all year. He's been talking candid forever, and it's like, wow, I didn't see that coming, but okay. If that's the truth, that's the truth.
It just looks – like, I would think Brady probably wouldn't bring it public. Arians brought it public. That's the thing. Like, that type of stuff is usually left for behind closed doors where, you know, at the end, if they win a championship, you know, it may leak out that, like, Brady ran the whole thing and Arians just let him run. It's rare that it just comes out and the coach is like, yeah, no, he coaches. I'm a cheerleader here.
What more can you say about Brady? Like, I can't believe he's back in a Super Bowl. It feels like at the end of Anchorman. Remember when Wes Mantooth grabs the ladder and he looks at Burgundy and goes, God, I hate you, Ron Burgundy, but I respect you. And that's it with me and Brady. Like, I can't believe he's going back. I'm sick of it, but I have so much respect for the guy. Like, he's 43 years old. He's off to his 10th Super Bowl, and the stats are already out there. They're going to keep digging them up and digging them up between now and next Sunday.
Yeah.
And you just have to respect the guy. He's 33-11 lifetime in the playoffs. 33-11, and that's the outlier. Like, you look at Rodgers and his career in the playoffs. Again, it's not great. He's around 500. So was Manning, you know. So was Elway. So was Marino. That's what you should expect. That's actually what happens with every other quarterback in history. You win some, you lose some. The outlier is Tom Brady. Like, the guy's just a machine, and all he does is win. And if he wins this Super Bowl, I don't think it's disputable. He's the greatest winner in the history of pro sports.
I think he always
in the history of pro sports.
He comes out smelling like a rose when it comes to sports. I'm not talking anything else. I'm sure people will get on him about, you know, politics or personal life. It's more. You remember the golf? Like, he was batting it around the first six holes.
Yep, getting goofed
on. And then his pants split, and it was a disaster. All of a sudden, he holed that one.
Yep. Yep.
And it was like, this guy just, he's a winner. Like, people just, that's how he is. Like, no matter what he does, he ends up coming out smelling like
it always works out for him, and certainly in football it does. And credit to Tampa, credit to Kansas City. We've got a lot of runway between now and a couple of Sundays from now to tee that up, and we will do just that. The Super Bowl is going to be heard right here on TSN Radio, seen on TSN and CTV. So we'll get to that throughout the next couple of weeks. Marcellus Wiley will join us at 5:30. The Leafs with a pretty impressive win yesterday, considering the circumstances. You know, flying across the country, playing 2 p.m. local time. Calgary had not played in a long time. Jack Campbell in net, and the Leafs pick up 2 points. They got 4-4 over the weekend. The Raptors won both games over the weekend, equally as impressive, with Lowry out, Siakam out last night. They're back in action tonight. We'll tee that up throughout the afternoon. But the deal went down over the weekend. Laine and Roslovic for Dubois on a third. Paul Maurice, the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, will join us. First question I got to ask him is, did he think that got in last night by Draisaitl? I mean, I was watching it live, and I was like, I don't know if that made it. It made it, and they stole two. Well, they didn't steal 2 points. They had a 2-1 lead, what, halfway through the third, and then the game was just haywire after that.
Yeah.
It was pretty wild. But Edmonton with a big 2 points in regulation. But we'll catch up with Paul, get his take on the trade, what Dubois brings to the team, why it didn't work with Laine in Winnipeg. We'll get back into the Leafs, back into the Raptors, and continue to touch on the football scene as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Marcellus Wiley in just over an hour. Ray Ferraro will join us into the 5 p.m. hour as well. The Raptors in action tonight. They took two games over the weekend, Friday against Miami, last night against Indiana. And the Leafs went 2-for-2. They got past both Alberta teams. They got Edmonton on Friday night and yesterday against Calgary. And we'll get into the Leafs scene a little bit later in the hour. 5-2 in the season. You know, it's a good start. Montreal's off to a great start, as we know. The Leafs are off to a pretty good start. It's a couple of teams kind of lagging behind. Ottawa's doing basically what we thought. Vancouver got pounced again over the weekend.
Well, they're be
not
fourth.
In a good spot.
Al's brother will have him ranked third maybe this week.
Yeah, I forgot
wow,
about Al's brother's
have
power rankings.
To see. You got Noodles is going to come through the TV if there's any upsetting numbers or stats on that.
No,
list.
I think they should actually probably be quite realistic of where we are. But I mean, let's not waste Paul Maurice's time talking
about
Al's brothers.
Yeah, I'm sure he
Al's
wants to hear
brothers.
About Al's brothers. He wants to know where Winnipeg
power
is.
Ranking.
I'll bet you he wants to. I'll bet you he'll tune in later. He wants to know specifically where Al's brother has slotted Winnipeg in the All Canadian Power Rankings, because it's very important intel, and I think it could really help him next time they're on the ice. The deal went down over the weekend, pretty substantial deal. Laine and Rostovic going to Columbus, Dubois on a pick coming back to Winnipeg, and let's head out there now. And here's the head coach of the Jets, Paul Maurice. How you doing, Paul?
Good, Falls. How are you today?
We're doing pretty well. We were talking about the end of that game last night. Did you think Draisaitl got it in on time? What was your reaction on the bench?
Yeah, I knew it was in. You know, you got that internal clock going. I knew he was coming back short side fast, and that he was going to have a good whack at it. So tough way to end the game, especially, you know, we're 5-7, right? You're burning it right down to the end of the wick there, and you're hanging on a little bit. Tough night for us for sure.
Well, in terms of your early impressions of the All-Canadian division, we've been loving it. How have you felt about it so far?
Yeah, it's outstanding. Like, I've always liked the idea that if the NHL could find a way, and I know it's a challenge to play back-to-back games with teams, the prep gets better, you get a way higher energy level. I think, you know, Ole can tell you that sometimes you get into that December through February stretch of hockey where you're seeing different teams and you're seeing teams from the East that you never see. It's tough to get that extra juice in the games, but it's not a problem now. I mean, that three games against Ottawa that we had, it got physical, it got heated, and you're going to see that. You know, I think it's great. I like the string of games together to make preps completely different for your team. And it feels like it, no matter in a regular NHL season or not, anytime you'd play a Canadian team, and this is true when you're playing in the States, there's something special because you know it means something in the city. So now it's just, as we call them, one anthem games are the best games to play, and it's been great.
Mo, you just mentioned, and I did your game last week in Ottawa. You just mentioned the schedule. Is that something you certainly have to be mindful of? It was 5-7. I believe you play tomorrow, but it could be 6-9 or 6-10. I mean, that's you got to be taking a look at guys' energy levels and managing your goaltenders. There's so many different things to factor in. Did you circle this stretch of games, or is this going to be like this the whole 17 weeks of the season?
No, so this was right away. You're worried about it. It's 5-7. They throw a 9 o'clock game in on you, and Edmonton's sitting here watching it. So you knew last night was going to be tough. I was really pleased by the way we came out, and then I was really pleased with the way we finished, because that there wasn't a lot in the tank for us, and they found a way to battle and get the lead. We just couldn't hang on to it. We've got, you know, we're going to go almost 7 weeks with 1 2-day block off and four sets of back to backs. That's going to be as heavy a schedule as anybody in the NHL has played. So it's going to be a real challenge. You've got to have two goalies that you can win on. It's not, you know, you used to throw the backup the back-to-back games, and a lot of nights, you know, if you won it, you were pretty happy. Now you need those points, 4 points every single night. But I think I think it's fair enough. You know, I mean, there's going to be some teams will have a little advantage at times. And when you hit teams right now, you know, we've had some players out of our lineup to the start, so it's been a bit of a challenge for us, but everybody's going to hit that. The team that stays the healthiest is probably winning this thing. You know, if you can keep your A players in the lineup and on the ice, you just got a way better chance.
So, Mo, the big trade goes down. Patrick Laine goes to Columbus. And I just have a question for you. You probably don't want to tell me the answer. I don't know if you know the answer. But I think you guys had a good working relationship. I don't think he hated the city of Winnipeg. So, ultimately, what was his – do you know the reason that he wanted out of there, or was that just for Patrick Laine to tell?
Yeah, I don't think – there's not a huge story here. You know what? You remember – I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember when you went into New York? We were in New York, and it came out that you were thinking – you made a comment in the paper, maybe it's time for me to move on. I don't know if you remember that one. But I think
here's what I actually said. Here's what I actually said. So I go out of the lineup, and you guys didn't score a goal, and I said to the guy in New York who just put me in a bad spot, he's like, so what's going on with this? I said, well, I was taken out of the lineup, and they're still not scoring, so I don't know what he's doing. And then I got in all kinds of trouble with Terry McDonald, et cetera, et cetera.
That kind of intrigues me more than the Laine deal. We can go down that road later in the hour.
We got to go back on that.
I'm pretty sure the line was, maybe it's time for me to move on. And I think you'd been in the league a solid 8 weeks at that point. So but you know what? I think with Patrick, he came in and he got off to a phenomenal start here. And then in year three, he wants more. And I understand that. And we, you know, we just kind of come off a phenomenal year, and he wanted more minutes, and that meant, based on the way the lines are structured, that meant playing with Mark Scheifele, and it just didn't work for me. It didn't work for the Winnipeg Jets, and I thought there was lots of really good opportunity where he was playing, and I think he just wanted more. So then it's more of a question of, you know, where are you 2 years from now? Where are you 3 years from now? Because look, this guy is an unbelievable scorer, and the guys who score the number of goals, and he's gonna score 50. He's probably gonna score 60. Those guys are getting a huge, huge ticket. So you want to know that you can sign a guy like that. So there's some questions on that too. You know, he wants a little different opportunity. Can you sign the guy going forward? What are you gonna do with that? So I don't think there was a big push on our side, but when an opportunity come up and you're going, hey, we can get a center iceman for the 3 pick and on the 2 pick. There's two great players that are gonna switch paths here. It just seemed almost maybe a safer route, and there wasn't a major issue. I had, you know, working. He was no different than working with any of these young guys here when they come into the league. We've had this really unique set of players come in. Kyle Connor would be an example of that. Like, this guy's a scorer, and he's a great player. Mm-hmm. But there's nights when they're young that they're not that good, right? So you're squeezing them a little bit, and you're trying to find them spots, and they all want more, and everybody wants more ice time. Mark Scheifele played more minutes than anybody on our team last year. He wants to play more. So it's a pretty normal thing. I never thought that it was that big an issue for Patrick. I give him credit. He came to training camp this year. He worked his butt off, probably for the first time. Like, he came to camp ready to work. And it was one of those things. You start to get worried about whether you're going to be able to sign a guy long term. And then, you know, the Dubois situation is evolving at the exact same time this one is, and it seemed like a real good fit.
With Paul Maurice, head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, as you know, Paul, I mean, you've been around a long time. There isn't a guy in league history that didn't want more minutes, didn't want more opportunity.
Yeah.
But it sounds, based on your explanation there, it was more about, you know, team building and what you believed was in the best interest of the team, where you didn't see him sharing a line with Scheifele. So even if he went out and ripped home 50, he wasn't necessarily going to get that opportunity. So that makes it unique. I mean, a lot of coaches historically would say, if you show me, I'll give you more. But it doesn't sound like that was even a possibility in a way.
Well, he played the entire year last year with Mark. So when Brian Little got injured, I moved Blake Wheeler into the middle. And so he played that year last year. And so there were good numbers, right? They put up some offensive numbers. But based on Mark's position on our team, he has to play against the other team's best an awful lot. They gave up quite a bit more than they got. So it wasn't a great fit. You know, right-handed shot. I played him left wing with Mark and Blake too. And you got three righties on the line. It's tougher to find that lefty in the slot when he's not there. So that part of the fit was going to be a challenge. And, you know, when we lost Brian, last year it became a bigger challenge for sure.
Well, and you guys, you bring in Pierre-Luc Dubois, who, I mean, we saw him, we've seen him for quite some time, but that five-game series last year against Toronto, I guess in August, he was an absolute beast. And he describes himself as a you know, player with size, two-way center, can put up some points. So you bring in a guy like that, you know, talented. Line A had a ton of talent as well. But how might this allow you, Paul, to change the way you coach in terms of line combinations, in terms of utilizing players in different spots, you know, bringing in a guy like Dubois and what he can do? How do you approach a situation like this?
So if you follow the structure of our team over the last 3 or 4 years, basically down the middle, I've had Shifley, Little, and Adam Lowry. So Shifley and Little are both kind of growing and coming into their own. And I used Adam Lowry almost in the two-hole. So I'd check with him. He played with Tanev, who's now in Pittsburgh, and Andrew Kopp, and they were a really effective checking line. What it allowed me to do was get Brian Little off the bench third. And that's where Nick Ehlers, Pat Laine, and Kyle Connor would do their damage, right? Because they're just, even if they had holes in their game, just their talent level is going to be quite a bit higher than anybody else's third line. What will change slightly is I'll be able to use Dubois and Shifley to pull traffic off each other. And Mark Shifley is either getting, if you've got a real strong checking line, they're coming after him, or he has to play every single night against Nathan MacKinnon, the other guy just like that, which is fine as long as, you know, your schedule is good, you're fairly healthy, and the guy never gets a break. You never get to hide him, to move him around. So I'm going to be able to do that with one of those two guys now. So I can use Lowry a little more carefully. I don't have to go to a hard match. And where the big benefit is on the road. So at home, going into last year, I think we were probably second in the NHL for home wins over the 2 years prior. And I think that structure of our lineup, I could get a hard match on Lowry, and it would let Scheif move around and would certainly let the third line move around with one of those skilled kids on it. Now I might be able to do that a little bit more on the road. So there's going to be nights where Dubois, depending on who I've got on the wings, he'll go head-to-head with the other team's best on the road, and I can move Scheif and Wheels and KC or Nick Ehlers around. That makes it much more difficult for the other team. Just take their back end alone. Most teams have a heavy stopper pair, or they have a pair they play against the other team's best. Now the road team's got a lot more weapons to use, and you can be a much more difficult team to match up against.
Well, that certainly applies to a bunch of teams up here when you consider the 1-2 punch in Edmonton, Toronto, Vancouver, right, and now Winnipeg. And I totally understand your logic. We've heard Sheldon Keefe say the same thing, utilize the same thing. We've had Travis Green on say similar things. As a fan, I just want to see them all battle, Paul. I want to see all these top-end centers battle. How often during a game, you know, if the other coach is intimating, like, let's say it's Toronto-Winnipeg, and Keefe is thinking Matthews, Shifley, and then he's like, for whatever reason, Tavares, Dubois. Like, is that a challenge where you're like, okay, let's go. Let's see where that goes, or how do you handle something like that?
Yeah, you want to be in a possession that you could just run that, right? Let the big dogs eat. Like, let them go after each other, and then you'll find out if you've got an advantage – then you want to make sure you keep that. But if you have a disadvantage, then I'm going to throw Lowry there, and I'm going to put that other guy on your three pair. Just think of the, I guess the most dominant set of this for years has been Crosby, Malkin, right? And then remember this: you go up against those guys, and what they do is they drop one of them down on the fourth line every once in a while to totally mess your matchup. So it gives you just so much more strength in 82 games, and maybe more importantly in this schedule right now. All those guys aren't going to be great every night, right? They just can't. So if you can move a guy away from the heavy cover, and it's not just whether they're on, it's whether they're injured, because these guys don't play healthy all the time. But that's the challenge for those players, right? They go head-to-head against the other team's best. If you've got two center ice that can drive play at both ends of the rink and you can move one of them around, you've created an advantage for yourself.
Mo, in our scrum the other day, you were talking about ice time, and I don't want you to take too much time to explain this, but I thought it was fascinating where you pointed out, like, Dallas and Tampa, their top players playing around 20 minutes a night. That's basically how, you know, teams have depth. It shows their depth, but it also shows that you can manage ice time throughout the year.
Well, it was just a function of, in the regular season last year, you look at the big number guys, right? You've got one of my guy in there. You've got Mark number three, but you've got Draisaitl, you've got Eichel, you've got McDavid. all of those guys played huge numbers. And if you looked at the top 20 forwards in the regular season, none of those guys played on teams that got out of the first round. But the two teams in the finals, I think Kucherov at 1956, I think was his number, and Seguin would have been the high number guy, I think, coming off Dallas, but he's under 20 as well. Now there's more to this, and again, this is where you don't want me to go too long. Part of that is if you got a really powerful team in the regular season, you get into your 5-1 games, you shut your bench down, right? You're not running your top end into the 20, and teams that had Scheifele and Eichs and these guys on it were chasing games like that. Those 2 points we had to win, so you're pushing your top end hard, but it's a huge advantage. And I think this schedule, it may be even actually more intense than your normal 82 because the 82's got rest. If you can keep your guys under those minutes, and we would measure even strength shift length probably more than anything else, value right. that. So I've got Scheife on huge minutes the first two nights. The first night we played against Calgary, but that was our first game, and we didn't play for 3 days, so I ran him hard, but it was almost all power play. He was about 7 minutes on power play time. The next night in Toronto, I didn't like his numbers at all. Right, I ran him too hard, and his shift length was too high. The next three games, he's under 50 seconds each shift, and they're banging in points left and right, and we're also coming from behind late in games. So I think it's got a big, big impact on this schedule as much as anything, keeping your players fresh and rested.
Well, we'll get you out of here, Mo. I just want to let you know, as far as the story about New York, I watch a lot of crime. Hang on a sec. I watch a lot of crime shows, and people get interviewed by the police. And when they get interviewed years later, their stories are way off compared to what actual reality is. So let's just scratch that one from the docket, because it never happened. So we appreciate you doing it, though.
But I think the way that story ended was John Davidson at the time was a color commentator for the New York Rangers, and he weighed in with maybe the kids should just shut up and play harder.
Yeah, well, I think
we can find that tape. If it's on record, we'll find it.
Unbelievable.
We need it.
I'll also send a note to John Davidson right now as well.
Thank you, Paul. We always appreciate it.
Yeah, take care. Have a good day.
There he is, Paul. Thanks, Maurice, Paul. The head coach of the Winnipeg Jets.
Dude, I'm telling you, that was a crock of you-know-what. It never happened.
You never would have said that? Dude, how old were you at that time?
I don't know, it's like my second year in the league, and I said, I get just bag skated, and the guy throws the camera in my face on the bench. I'm the only guy in the rink, and I'm just like, I don't know. We can't score, and I still can't get in the lineup. And my quote was, so I don't know what he's doing with me. And that's all I said. I never said, maybe I got to go. I would never say that. I would never be Pierre-Luc and say, I got to go somewhere else. I just did not say that.
All right.
You know there is a fan right now digging through archives trying to find that.
It's a dumpster dive like you've never seen before.
Well, if it comes up, I'm not on the show today because it's fabricated. It's not real.
Well, if there's audio of it, then we just play it. Like, we don't know what it is.
Well, you will not find it. There is no audio.
We're never going to find it. It's not. It's from 30 years ago, 25 years ago.
Yeah, it's not happening.
We're not going to find it, but.
And John Davidson would never say that. He's my boy. He's
you know
my
who
guy.
Would have been doing play-by-play with your boy, JD?
Sam Rosen.
Sammy Rosen. And you know what I'll bet you what Sam Rosen said when he heard your quote.
I get
it. My goodness. That's probably what he said.
Dude, I've told you about my interaction with him, have I not?
Who, Sam Rosen?
Yeah.
No.
I'm in the Stanley Cup Finals, and this guy's doing radio for NHL Network. And it's the finals. I'm going for breakfast on the way to the rink. And there's this moron trying to parallel park in front of me. And I start giving him the horn and screaming obscenities. And I pull up beside the guy. It's Sammy Rosen.
Oh, my goodness.
He comes in the locker room after the game or after morning skate. And I go, Sam, I go, that was... I did not know that was you. I didn't even know why would you be on Hillsborough Street in Raleigh, North Carolina? He goes, well, I was getting breakfast. I go, well, me too. I go, you don't know how to park, man. He goes, it was a bit of a, I had to air it out with Sam Rosen.
I can't believe we just saw that.
That was your Sam Rosen moment, watching Sam Rosen try to parallel park.
Dude, it was one of those ones, though, where it wasn't just, hey, buddy, pull your head out of your ass. It was 10 times worse.
Which is just amazing because you're in the cup final. You'd think you're on roses, like walking on clouds. Everything's great.
No, worse. Everything's worse. And then I pull up eye to eye to really give it to him, and it's my guy, Sammy Rose.
Oh, my goodness.
I bet you he just buried you during the play-by-play.
In his mind, I was the worst player on the ice every shift, I think.
I've got breaking news here, too. Did you see the email that Steph just sent to us?
No, I have not seen it.
It's the quote.
No, it's not.
It is.
Okay, we come back and we play.
It.
All right, we'll come back and we'll review it.
Dude, we're not doing the quote. We're not doing that.
Why not?
You guys,
we have access
somebody
to
made
the quote.
It up.
You think someone made this up? Okay.
Yeah, you're a fraud.
All right. We'll see if we can get to the bottom of this. All right, his mic's off now. He's got his headphones off. We're 100% reading this thing. Ray in 20, Marcellus Wiley at 5:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up in about 15 minutes. Marcellus Wiley at 5:30. How are we going to handle this? It's your call, though.
We're not.
No one wants to sue anybody.
No.
You know, if the Packers lost today.
I just got a text from my brother and says, "You're a moron. I remember you saying it." So go ahead, read the quote.
Well, the problem is now that we're on TV, radio, and everyone's online finding it and sending it. Like, it's come in.
Yeah, I know. I get it. It's out there.
Okay, so this is for the audience that's listening, reading, that doesn't have access to the internet. So I guess you had been benched 3 games in a row.
Do you want to read the headline, or where are you going?
Yeah,
with
okay.
This?
So the headline is, I don't know, where was this? The Current staff, right? What is that? The Hartford Current was the newspaper.
Yeah, it's my second year in the league. Hartford
second
Current.
League. It's 97, October 21st. So we're just getting started into the new season. The headline is Carolina going out of its mind. Is that what you're reading, Noodles?
No, this one says poor play puts O'Neill on the Canes bench.
Also
leaves Hurricane center Jeff O'Neill in limbo.
Okay, so that means there's like multiple articles about the same topic because I found a different one here.
I guess I don't know what's going on here. Either way, like I say, you know what? We've all had moments like this. We're not here to kick you in the nuts.
So apparently my quote is, I don't know what the coach is thinking. Maybe it's time to move on because I've had just about enough of it.
End quote. Pierre-Luc O'Neill. I love it. Well, listen, you ended up playing there another 8.5 years, more than that. So I think everything worked out. Yeah. But
I look back on that, I'm like, how did they not deal me immediately? Like, just.
Well, clearly Mo remembered it pretty well. He picked it off 24 years later. And he seemed to remember that quote, but
you know what?
What are you
going
to do?
I think Mo explained it best. He said, "You know, you were a young guy, still coming into your own, and a lot of times you allow young players to grow, and they make mistakes." And I think the Patrick Laine stuff is this exactly same thing. Like, I don't know if you saw Blake Wheeler's comments. Blake Wheeler was like, "Hey, I'll take some of the responsibility. I wish that I was, helped him out," like, type of thing. I thought it was a little bit of clickbait, the headline on it. When I read it, it was Blake Wheeler takes, I can't remember how it was, takes
responsibility or whatever. The thing is that you got to remember with this deal is they're both the exact same in terms of an exit. Pierre-Luc Dubois demanded out too. Like, this isn't a scenario where it was one kid, he just got a little bit too far ahead of himself and they had to flip him, and here comes a grizzled, team-oriented vet. Pierre-Luc Dubois did the exact same thing. In fact, he did it more publicly. Laine never technically demanded anything. He showed up, he played, and he went on with his business. Pierre-Luc Dubois went out in a much worse way. Much worse way.
Yeah.
So
it's
the example of two guys from the same draft. One went second overall. The other one went third overall. Both of them decided it wasn't going to work. And now they flip positions, basically. You know, and that's why I think this deal always made sense. I think it's a smart play for both sides.
Yeah, and they both are going to be under the gun because they want it out. But I don't blame them whatsoever. You got 10 years, if you're lucky to play in the NHL. You never know with injuries or different situations. So you might as well do it where you want. I don't know if these guys ultimately ended up. I can't see Patrick Laine wanting out of Winnipeg and going to Columbus as his ultimate destination. But you get 10 years.
And you don't want to play somewhere, you just go somewhere else. I don't blame him at all.
Well, I didn't realize this at Dubois' dad. I forgot. I played against Dubois' dad, which is weird because it makes me feel really old. But his dad's an assistant coach, I believe, in Winnipeg's system.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, Manitoba.
Yep. He's in Winnipeg, you know, right now, and he has been, yeah. So that should make it more comfortable for him. Yeah. Like, I agree with your premise, though, but at some point you got to kind of settle in and play.
Just go
too,
play.
Right? Like, you got to keep growing, and you want to get paid, and you want to establish some sort of a legacy in the game. You don't want to just every couple of years say, it's not working for me, see you later, especially when you're a high-end player. You know, if you're holding on for dear life, you take what you can get and you go wherever you got to go.
It doesn't work out for the players moving forward. The team decides they're moving on because they don't want him anymore.
Exactly.
Agreed. And the other thing I'll say is Patrick Laine, it doesn't matter where he goes. He doesn't seem like the guy who's going to retire in that city. He's going home when his career's over. That would be my guess. And most of those guys from Finland and Sweden and all that, they do that.
I think that applies to 90% of athletes.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly,
for the most part. So, we'll get back into this with Ray. We'll touch on the Leafs as well. We'll get into the Leafs weekend, the win yesterday, the win Friday night. Jack Campbell, what happened towards the end of the game last night. There's a lot to get into there. Hour two coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.